Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, Vice President of Technology for the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector. So I can attest, it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world in developing and adopting new solutions to industry problems. Thanks for joining us and for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. My goal of the podcast is to outline a problem in the produce industry and then discuss several possible solutions that can be deployed today. Stout Industrial Technology collaborates with customers to build and launch industrial technology solutions that are designed to last. The Smart Cultivator combines a proprietary, agriculturally proven mechanical platform with Stout True Vision technology to eliminate weeds and cultivate ground in a single pass. Visit stoutagtech.com. That's stoutagtech.com to learn more. In today's episode, we travel to South Africa to find out what is happening in ag and ag tech in this important region. We will first hear from Wandile Chatoba, who studied agriculture economics at university and has worked in private sector agriculture, consulting with farmers across the country. He is now the chief economist at the Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. His recent book, called Finding Common Ground, is a selection of key articles from his regular Business Day column, along with insightful commentary. The book outlines the challenges and opportunities faced by South Africa's agricultural sector. Of the many important themes in this book, and there are many, I recommend everyone take a look at it, we will focus on my three favorite themes. Technological developments, agricultural driving development and job creation, and the urgent need for agricultural policy to address gender equity. After Wandile, we will hear from two innovative ag tech startups in South Africa, Aerobotics and Aggregate One. Let's jump into the conversation with Wandile. Welcome, Wandile. It's very nice to have you on the podcast. Please start by introducing yourself, a little bit about your background and your current role.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. My name is Wandile Sithobo. I am a South African agricultural economist. In a current role, I work for the Agriculture Business Chamber of South Africa. So the Agriculture Business Chamber is basically an association of agribusinesses. Almost everyone that operates in South Africa's agricultural and food value chain, with the exception of the farmers. We have the input suppliers, financing institutions. We also have then the food processing companies and the grain handlers and everyone. That's what Agricultural Business Chamber, or in short, AGBIS, is. We also then do operate across the Southern Africa base, even though we are pretty much focused, stationed in South Africa. And my role there is chief economist of the organization.
Wow. And you have time to write a daily column while you're doing that role as well. And I've been reading your book called Finding Common Ground. And the book is a selection of key articles from that Business Day column, framed with insightful commentary and context. And the book covers important broad themes and outlines the challenges and opportunities faced by Africa's agriculture sector. And there's so many different themes in it. And many of the themes are land reform, leadership, cannabis, and trade. And I encourage everyone listening to this to read the book. I got mine, the electronic version, for my Kindle, so it's very easy to get. And each one of those topics could be a full podcast in itself. But we're going to focus on a few of these broad topics that I think our listeners will be interested in. And those three that we're going to look at are technological developments on the continent, agriculture driving development and job creation, and the urgent need for agricultural policy to address gender equity and youth involvement. So let's start with my favorite topic, the technological developments and megatrends underpinning agricultural development.
Yeah, on that one, I mean, I think we will have Vonnie to take the view from a continental perspective, because South Africa's agriculture is pretty much diverse. If you look at some of the countries like South Africa and maybe a few in Southern Africa like Zambia, that's where you see that technology has pretty much contributed immensely in boosting productivity over the past couple of years, particularly in the case of South Africa, and technology in two ways. Firstly, on a biotechnological side, and also on a biological side, and also on a mechanical side. I mean, on a biotech, you think about South Africa, we probably now the only African country that from the early 2000s adopted the use of genetically modified seeds. Also, heavy use of some of the chemicals that, yes, environmentally friendly to a certain extent, but also useful in boosting productivity in agriculture. Zambia is one of those countries that is also starting to adopt more of the biotechnological aspects that are helping in boosting productivity. And on the mechanical side, that's where the uptake is also following up. I would say South Africa is on the lead again, at least in the sub-Saharan Africa, because as far as you look up north, Egypt, Morocco, and all of those other countries are also advancing to a certain extent in there. But I think at the core of everything, technology has been key in boosting productivity, yields per hectare. That's what we've seen its role playing on. But I think of late, some of the technologies that we do see playing an important role, especially if you look at the East Africa, as well as amongst the smallholder farmers, it's either technologies for ensuring that market information reaches people, use of drones and all other aspects, that too is beginning to take shape or be adopted to a certain extent. And this, Vonnie, is across all subsectors of agriculture, either it's horticulture, field crops, livestock and poultry. That's where we do see this uptake and tech being very important on boosting productivity.
On the genetically modified seeds, do you see other countries will start accepting it? And what do you think the barriers are that people don't want to use GM seeds?
I think the barriers are in two ways, largely more on a political side. I would say that's the heavy one rather than on a scientific side. There is beginning to be some bit of openings. And I say this because if you look at countries like Kenya and you look across the East Africa region, they're beginning to be a lot of tests that are being done on cotton to a small extent on corn. So I'm thinking that in the next couple of years, we could see policy changing. Even in countries like Zimbabwe, the importation of GM seeds is beginning now to has been allowed, permitted. The next step now is looking at, say, can it be adopted for planting and not only just staple grains, but across a number of crops. So that's something we are watching. And I think the next 5 years or so could be revolutionary on that end.
On the mechanical side, like you mentioned some of the adoption, what types of technologies are you seeing in the mechanical use of mechanization and different types of, is it harvesting or planting or what are you seeing?
I think, I mean, it differs on a country by country basis. If you look at South Africa, when you look at Central South African farms, for example, across our agriculture belt, what you see here is not very different what you will see in South America or somewhere in the US or Australia, but as you, which means then that's both on the tractors, much more latest tractors that people use, and also combine harvesters. But in the African continent, that's where then there tends to be some bit of changes in a sense that the farms in a number of African countries are still smallholder farming. Mm-hmm. So you see the major combined harvesters that you see in countries that have an industrial agriculture. And I think that's where there's still role for a number of players, technology providers, John Deere, and all of those guys to study those countries and see what sort of mechanical technologies they could bring in some of these countries. But certainly harvesters and tractors, but different scales depending on a country's agriculture.
Yeah, and I think a lot, certainly in the U.S. as well, for the horticulture crops, things need to be smaller, more compact than some of the bigger row crops. And so we're seeing that starting to be developed as well. So what else is, what do you think is needed? You mentioned, you know, having, bringing different tractors and that sort of thing, but what other technology do you think is needed for the continent, and where else will that technology come from? Or are you developing it in Africa, or is it coming from other places?
I think the one thing that we need to think about is the question of saying, how do you improve productivity in Africa's agricultural sector? And the first step there starts with saying, how do we get investments coming in, either on the private sector or public investments coming into the sector? And that goes back to broader policies across the African continent of saying people are not investing a lot in agriculture because there are property rights issues. People are not investing a lot in agriculture because of the infrastructure constraints, public sector infrastructure that could be put in place. But I think as soon as we move through that hurdle, which is where policymakers need to play a role in, then we'll begin to see the investments in technology. And I think the first start on the technological side, it needs to really to say what better seeds can we get in across the horticulture, across the cereals. And I think institutions that supply the best seeds should be allowed to get in that country, because in the end, you will compete in the global market and with everyone that is using the better seeds. So I think farmers should be more open to be allowed and be more open to buy wherever they can procure. And I think we do see that to a large extent in South Africa, more opening up where farmers can procure seeds wherever they want. Obviously, the roles of the regulators will still be there before the seeds could be adopted in the country. But I think there needs to be more openness. And I think next to that step, the next one is really on the mechanical side. And I think on the mechanical side, there begins to be some movement. If you talk to people in Ethiopia, for example, now, Voni, there's already some opening up of importing some of the machinery that is needed in agriculture. The Ethiopian government has slashed tariffs that were there for many years for now some of the machinery that farmers needed. There were tariffs that were just increasing the input costs, but the country was protecting nothing because it wasn't really producing some of these machines. So I think that sort of openness is the first step. And obviously, over time, as industrial policy across countries starts to become more vibrant and they are thinking about producing their own seeds and their own machinery, that's the next step that could happen. But at the start is really openness so that everyone can use the resources that farmers across the world are utilizing.
And how much focus is there on environmental sustainability initiatives, both on the policy side and on the actual production side?
I think environmental sustainability and the whole discussion around climate change is increasingly gaining momentum. And I think we are forced by the circumstances. We live in a, take for example, the Southern Africa parts of the continent. Typically, say before 2010, we used to have droughts after every 4 year, 5 year cycles. Mm-hmm. But right now we are being hit by droughts after every 2 years. And that discussion has made people to think more thoroughly to say, okay, we need to take the climate change situation very seriously and see what are the better farming methods, what ways can we use whatever techniques we're using in farming, but in a more sustainable way. So I would say the negative effects of climate change are forcing people to actually be producing better. And that urgency is both coming from the industry perspective, but also the policymakers, because you will remember that most African countries still have agriculture taking up 25%, 20% of GDP, employment nearly two-thirds of that. So when that shock of the drought caused by climate change is there, it really has major consequences. Mm-hmm. So the urgency is coming from both ends.
So let's move to the next topic. This is ag driving development and job creation. So looking at harnessing agriculture to address poor economic activity and higher unemployment in rural areas. Please tell us your thoughts about this and how is this especially relevant in horticulture crops?
I think horticulture, I mean, if you talk to any South African policymaker and you say, oh, in agriculture, are you seeing it as a way to lift economic activity and job creation in rural areas? The one thing they will tell you on that is a focus is horticulture, fruits and vegetables, because that for us is labor intensive, but also high value, but also healthy, which is what we're promoting, that many people needs to be consuming healthy so that they could live longer and live happy lives. So that is one of the key focus. And obviously, even if you look at the exports of South Africa's agricultural sector, I mean, right, the top 10 is all horticulture with the exception of corn and beef. So horticulture is the main focus. And for areas of expansion in South Africa, which we are seeing, all of the major expansion that is happening across the country is on horticultural production. Either it's avocados, it's citrus, it's deciduous fruits, it's on across the range of vegetables. And this message that is happening in South Africa is also happening across the African continent, where expansion in agriculture, people are saying it needs to be on horticulture. Global demand is solid, but also high value and labor intensive for addressing the issue of employment. But most importantly, perhaps an issue I should have mentioned earlier, in green housing and everything else, horticulture takes less space, but also you can do a lot under the green housing facilities, which is what we are seeing happening across in some African countries. And I think over time, that will begin to take shape, because that's technological capabilities, people being able to control their production climate and be able to get better yields. And that's something that we think it will continue to take shape. But at the core, addressing unemployment, addressing the issue of economic activity in the rural areas of Africa.
I didn't know that about greenhouses. Which crops are you growing under greenhouse?
It's largely a range of vegetables that you do see in South Africa. If, for example, one day when you visit South Africa, you're driving out of Johannesburg, the major city, just outside of it, you will see a couple of greenhouses that people put across, and they are doing some really nice vegetables, which then they also closer to market in the cities. So that also reduces their transaction costs in one way or another.
And reduces waste, right? Because you don't have to travel as far.
100%.
Yeah, that's great. So my last area in your book, you cover the need for agricultural policy to address gender equity and youth involvement. And I've also watched a couple of YouTube videos of panel discussions recently that you've done on this topic, which is an important topic globally. So how have you seen this issue evolve over the last 2 years?
Yeah, I think over the last 2 years or so, we've started to see conditions becoming better. I mean, you look back 10 years, not only in the case of South Africa, where I'm having a conversation virtually with you from, but across the African continent, in a leadership position of agricultural companies, but also agricultural associations, it was largely men. You walk in a room, you will find that it is a meeting of men. But right now, we are beginning to see more women also represented in them. And I think that in that topic, we need really to get over the fact that you're not doing women any favors on that, but it actually benefits the organization to have that diversity of thought, either on policy or on a leadership position side. And I think it's an appropriate discussion that we keep emphasizing and we keep raising. But not only ending there, I think that across all ranks, even on the labor markets, if you look at South Africa's agricultural labor market, we have roughly 810,000 people working in primary agriculture. And there, roughly a third is women, and the other majority is still men. We do think that there could be flexibility, particularly with the horticulture that we are boosting as a country, as an area of focus. Women need to participate more into that. But also across the research and services, the scholarships offered a lot to women. That's something that the universities in South Africa are starting to prioritize. And we do think that we need more women scientists, more women agricultural economists and stuff. So that's something that I think there is at least a major focus in South Africa, both from the industries and also the lawmakers. They are putting a bit of an emphasis on that. My hope is that now this message could go broader in the continent. We all know from statistics that majority of smallholder farmers in the African continent are women, but we need to see now women playing a much more important role in the value chains and in the leadership positions of agriculture across the African continent.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's true everywhere. And women have so much to offer just in understanding what's going on the farm and really being able to relate and bring a diversity of thought, as you mentioned. And so I'm glad that that's being looked at as it is everywhere and hope to continue to see improvement because we've got a long way to go. Well, thank you so much. It's been great talking to you. And I look forward to the time when I can come visit you and see some of these things in person. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will move into our conversation with two startups who are working on products to solve some of the challenges just outlined, Aerobotics and Aggregate One. We're now speaking with Vic Vandenberg, the VP of Grower Relations at Aerobotics. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. So please tell me about your company, Aerobotics.
Well, Vonnie, in a nutshell, we're an agri-tech company that works in the aerial imagery space and artificial intelligence. And our mission is essentially to build intelligent tools for agriculture. Aerobotics has a vested interest in ensuring global food supply, as many other businesses do. And we're hoping that with the tools that we are able to develop and offer to growers and producers and industry stakeholders around the world, we can essentially allow them to optimize their yields and essentially ensure productivity and enough food for them to remain in business and to supply the growing global demand.
So what crops do you work on? What range of crops?
So our focus is perennial tree crops. So that's essentially all fruit and tree nuts that you could imagine around the world. We also do vines and grapes, but we're particularly powerful when it comes to trees that are grown commercially. And that's why, you know, some of the main areas that we're focusing and developing in and investing in are those places that are growing tree crops for food production around the world.
And so in supplying the information and the work that you do you supply the customers with drones or are you giving them data? What information are you getting them and how's that working?
All right. Well, that's a common question. So we do not supply the drones. I mean, we use the drones essentially to collect the information. But to the actual collection of that information and imagery, we do so with a network of the third-party accredited pilots or businesses that essentially are in the business of flying drones all around the world. So when a particular customer requests a drone flight for our services, we have an operations team that essentially will source a pilot and that pilot will then go and collect that data and send it to us. Our proprietary algorithms and machine learning models will then analyze and process that data, and then we deliver that in our platform to the grower. So the pilot network that we have stretches all around the world, and that's what's given us the opportunity to scale our business because at the drop of a hat, we can have a pilot on your ranch collecting and flying information. So we've got very quick turnaround times and multiple pilots around the world. So irrespective of the size of the job, we can get it done.
That's a great model. Then you don't have to own the drones either. And the growers don't have to figure out how do I fly this drone. So that seems like a great model, having everybody do the piece that they do the best.
Yes. Look, we do have options for certain growers or customers that own their own drones. Many do. And they are more than welcome to fly and collect the data and send it to us. And that's those all options we have. But we find that in general, because it's quite time consuming and for large operations, it can be quite an investment in terms of the hardware. Growers generally find it far easier for us to do the collection piece and then they get the information.
So how do they get the information, the analysis? Is it an app on their phones or how is that delivered?
Yeah, so we've got a desktop or a web-based app, which you essentially gain access through once you become one of our customers. And there's also a free demo account that anyone can create if they visited our website to see or have an idea of what it is we offer. And then we also have a mobile app, which you can download on your smart device. And the two are actually very important because they work hand in hand. The desktop app is essentially the opportunity to view the imagery and the analytics that we provide through the processing of the data that we collected. And the mobile app is essentially the tool that the grower would use to go and investigate inside his orchards and collect information on a personal level. So the desktop app is essentially where we deliver the analysis. And this is in a form of multi-layered georeference, multispectral imagery. So depending on what you'd like to look at, whether it may be the health of your crop or the size of your trees or even the number of trees, those are essentially all tools that we've built to for the grower to work with to try and understand what some of the variables may be in his orchard. And then the mobile app is essentially the tool for him to go and find or get to those places in the orchard where he would like to go and intervene or stage an inspection.
So what's the biggest value that you're bringing to the customers? What kind of insights are they getting and what decisions are they able to make with your analysis?
So that's a very good question. And that's one that we asked ourselves every day when we were in the early days of the development, because we didn't want to just be a service that takes pictures and drop them off. Uh-huh. We wanted to be a service that takes pictures, provides accurate and relevant data-driven information to the grower with internal ag experience, which we have, and then to create tools and services to allow growers to take action to eventually mitigate possible risks, intervene, and then be able to track those changes over time by using our service over and over and over again. So ultimately, what our imagery does is allowing growers to quantify and identify underperformance in their orchards. So growers are faced with tough challenges all around the world: irrigation, water stress, pests and disease, soil quality, vectors. All these things are essentially challenges that growers are faced with every single day. And especially very large corporations, it's extremely difficult to keep a finger on it all because no business can have thousands of team members running around on the farm keeping a track on this. So what we essentially do is we are able to take very large operations and map them and allow them through a series of user flows and user interface and tools to be able to go and identify orchards that may be underperforming and then go take a deep dive into those orchards to identify inside that particular block, where are these areas of underperformance? What may it be? Is it the slope? Is it the health of the trees? Is it the canopy sizes? Could it be soil? Could it be nutrition? Could it be irrigation? And then we've created a tool to allow the farmer to essentially get into the orchard to those places and collect information and come back and sit down with his crop advisors or his nutritional consultant or his irrigation specialist and take those corrective measures. So we see this as a full circle end-to-end solution, rather than like a halfway stop, if that answers your question.
Hmm. So you started in South Africa, but you've now become a multinational company. So where do you have offices and where are you operating globally?
So yes, we started in South Africa and our operations department still very much sits here. But on a commercial level and on a development level, we are now active all around the world. We have our headquarters or commercial headquarters in Los Angeles and a team of both customer team members and other stakeholders that operate in the United States between Florida and California. And then we also have teams in other parts of the world. Some of our big focus areas this year is in Portugal and Australia, but we also have a footprint in several other countries where certain large grower groups may use our services.
So what do you see are the differences between operating in the US and South Africa? How have you seen those differences and how have you responded to those differences?
I think on an operational level, we're very fortunate that we are a cloud-based software. So it doesn't really matter where in the world we are. We can essentially operate and process information. On the collection of the data, we're fortunate enough to have been able to, just as easily as we did in South Africa, build and create a network of drone pilots in the United States. And so that for us was very fortunate. And so that hasn't been a hiccup. I think one of the big things we see as a differentiator between the United States and South Africa is the scale. Yes, South Africa is a leader in agriculture around the world. Many continents or countries look at South Africa in agriculture as like the pinnacle and forefront of technology, because growers have historically had to work extremely hard to grow high quality crops for the export market, whereas certain large areas had a massive domestic market, and that high quality wasn't always something that they had to fret about too much. But the United States, in terms of scale in let's call it acres and crop density, is massive compared to South Africa. So as a young business with massive ambitions, we would like to scale. And so the obvious choice for us would be to go there with the highest density of acreages of our primary tree crop. And that's why we're operating there. And so far, it's been fantastic. And we've been well received by large grower operations there, and including the insurance sector. And that's why a big focus for us this year is going to be investing and building in the United States.
Yeah, I've been to several of your events in the U.S. and familiar with how you guys have been expanding in the last couple of years. And I've really been impressed on how organized the events were and how you were able to come into a new geography and bring the right people together. I was in an event up in Napa, and it was just very impressive, because as a person who does events, I know how hard it is to get the right people in the room to have a discussion. So how do you do that? How is your organization built that you can go into geography and get going so quickly?
I think it's twofold, to be honest, and I agree with you. It is tough to get growers or stakeholders to attend these events. Everyone's very busy, as you know, and especially farmers, considering the fact that he's not only the farmer on site, he's also the electrician and the plumber. So whatever time he thought he had available, he usually gets consumed by something else. I think the reason why we've had success and great traction is, one, we have an incredible internal marketing team that are essentially experts in efficiencies and value proposition positioning. And doing that, we're able to really land what it is we do and why it's worthwhile attending in as few words as possible through the content creation that they do. So that's one component, and we're very fortunate to have them. The second component is relationships, and our customer team on the ground, their number one priority is growing long-term trust with our customers and strong relationships in the sector with all stakeholders. And because of those two components, we're able to get customers to attend because of that relationship piece, but also the broader audience, we're speaking to them in a language that they want to hear and creating interest for them to attend. And when they do so, we obviously shoot the lights out in terms of presentation. And then that essentially then fuels the demand for the next event. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's my personal outlook on why we've been so successful.
Yeah, I agree. Those are all the things that happen in the back office and then in the event itself. And it really shows. So, well, thank you so much for your time. And I really appreciate you being willing to take time out and talk to me about what you guys are doing. And I wish you the best of luck. Next, we'll be talking to Greg Whitaker. He's the founder and CEO of Aggregate One. So tell me about yourself and your company. And thanks for being here.
Thanks very much, Bonnie, and thanks for having me, and thanks to the PMA. So where does it start? I grew up on a citrus farm on the Limpopo River in Limpopo in South Africa, and started this company in 2018. The main reason for starting it was to actually get my dad to stop complaining
Did that work?
Everyone, it hasn't worked yet. He is a farmer, so we know how it goes. But yeah, we started it in 2018 and started it with myself and a few co-founders. And yeah, it's grown to, I think we're 16 people at the moment in the business, largely on the computer science and data science side of things. Yeah, and we focus on a thing called a market network, where we create a software as a service or a service as a software and create workflow in the business on the farming side, as well as the buying side and into the kind of logistics components too. And we overlay disparate tech systems and create a single view for our users. So, you know, we can have a whole bunch of different kind of service providers linked to one part of the supply chain or one order from the farm. Yeah, and then we create a kind of unique identity and unique communications between the parties that are kind of, that flow throughout the system and create kind of efficiency in it. So, you know, we try take out a bit of the administrative tasks of WhatsApps and emails and Excel sheets through doing that. And then what that creates is a kind of market reporting and price comparison and working largely towards, you know, decreasing waste and sustainability in the industry.
Wow, fabulous. So is the grower your primary customer, or do you have different customers throughout the chain?
No, so we have growers as customers. We have exporters as customers. We have importers as customers. We have, you know, cold store facilities as customers. We have shipping lines as customers. We have logistics companies as customers. I think, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do is kind of just strengthen the relationships between the parties and take out any administrative or burdens or kind of manual work and see how much we can automate of that current manual process.
Mm. So it's anyone who needs that information and wants to see that flow.
Correct. Yeah. So we've got data as a service. So what we try to do is offer our data sets for decision making to our clients.
So the global produce supply chain has been so impacted by COVID worldwide. How has your company responded to the changing needs for trade?
Well, I think it's positively affected kind of technology and a need for online. For example, you know, in the past, a lot of our clients, our exporter or importer clients, would need to get out to the growers and kind of go and do farm visits and have a look at the produce and the estimation for the season and that. And, you know, by taking a lot of that online, it's kind of helped that the guys don't have to kind of be there all the time and kind of follow up on what the produce is looking like or the kind of the estimation or forecast for the next season. So I think it's definitely affected us positively in terms of the global supply chain. I think it's definitely moved things more online and the need for less kind of for lack of a better word, in terms of like in physically intense kind of labor practices. So working on Excel sheets, joint Excel sheets, or, you know, kind of WhatsApps or heavy emails or things like that. And I think it's been a positive impact on agriculture as a whole, especially in South Africa.
Yeah, I think that's been really interesting to watch. I've seen that in other parts where people are starting to rely more on technology and not having to see everything with their eyes. And so I think that's been an interesting change that's happened during COVID. Do you think it'll go back the other way, or do you think people will, you know, start from here and move forward and relying on technology more?
Look, I think you'll never ever get away from human interaction. I think you'll also never get away from relationships. And I think that's a key focal point of what we kind of trying to keep core and center, is that, you know, there is a need for all the players in the industry and how do we strengthen that relationship through technology. So How do you make the data more accurate? How do you make sure that, you know, what both parties are looking at are very similar? I think, you know, my original background is from the logistics kind of universe. And, you know, when I worked there, I always would hear how bad logistics was, but coming from you know, the grower side. But now, you know, with understanding the whole supply chain, you know, everyone is trying to do a job at the end of the day, and everyone's trying to kind of fulfill a common goal in terms of taking that produce and getting it to the end consumer. And I think, you know, that's been, like super important in terms of the progression of the whole industry. And what I think will stay in place is the relationships between the players, but where I think it will change quite drastically is how the information is shared and used.
Did you start as a global company, and what have the challenges been to go global?
So I don't think anyone ever starts as a global company. I think, you know, the nature of the industry is that there's obviously, you know, there's local market challenges which are quite unique to local markets, and then there's global market challenges that are very unique to global challenges. And I think coming from, you know, a freight forwarding background and a shipping background is, you know, naturally the way I would progress would be more on the export import global market side, because it's what I knew. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's how we focused our business. We are completely pack house to end consumer, and that's where we play. You know, that's kind of it fits directly in what we're trying to solve. Whereas I think, you know, to do it locally comes with a completely different skill set too. And there are companies that do it really well, and there are companies that I would way rather work with and partner with in South Africa who are doing amazing things in the local kind of market, in terms of inclusiveness in farming, in terms of, you know, the whole kind of agricultural industry as a whole in South Africa. So, you know, we started kind of on the export import side, and it kind of started letting us get clients in Asia, in Germany, and in kind of places, you know, outside of South Africa too. And then it's kind of just grown from there, and the need for kind of closing the gaps in terms of where that data is and throughout the supply chain just kind of gets bigger and bigger, and it grows from your origin ports to your destination ports to your handling to your receivers at your destination port. So it kind of naturally progressed that way.
So what do you see as the challenges and opportunities in ag and in ag tech in South Africa, kind of stepping back a little bit?
So I think challenges are probably market entry is pretty tough. So your barriers to entry into the industry are quite high. I do see infrastructure as a bit of a kind of stumbling block in some of the kind of effectiveness of agriculture too. You know, I think exports are critical in South Africa just because of the return in GDP in the country and the amount of employment in this country. And I think, you know, by enabling infrastructure to create more sustainable and commercial farming, you know, it has a very positive impact on the GDP, and it will have a very positive impact on a GDP. Another challenge, I guess, is political and land risk, and something that I think South Africa does need to solve. And there are some really good kind of books to read about it. Like one in particular that comes to mind is one written by Wandile Sehlowo. And I think, you know, that is something that I think is a challenge that can be turned into an opportunity. You know, driving, I think it's important to drive inclusiveness in agriculture in South Africa, and there's a way to do it. Within creating kind of equilibrium in the industry itself. From an opportunity point of view in ag tech, I think, a big thing is you got to sell a problem before a solution. I think often people try to sell solutions and then attach a problem to it.
Yeah.
You know, I believe there's a massive thing in first sell the problem and then the solution. So, you know, there are problems to be solved. And if you solve those problems, then, you know, you solve for the solution too. And then I think there's massive opportunities for agriculture in South Africa. I think, and in Southern Africa, you know, I think, as I mentioned earlier, more inclusive agriculture projects, you know, uplifting smallholder farmers a bit more. And then tech as a whole, you know, there definitely is improvement for technology across various areas and focal points. You know, there's on-farm technologies, there's packhouse technologies, there's logistics technology. So there are opportunities for it. I do think that in the long run, you know, it's going to be critical in sticking to kind of what you're good at too, and kind of making sure you stay ahead of market in that.
This was such an interesting episode to do. Nothing like talking to a good ag economist to get the lay of the land. I love how Wandile ties together regulation, policy, social open-mindedness, and reaction to real examples of climate change in his solution sets for further increase in productivity. And also that he recommends increasing the growing of produce across the continent as a way to address unemployment and rural development. I look forward to seeing great innovations like these two companies from Africa. That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions of what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe, eat your fruits and vegetables, and we will see you next time.